Welcome to the Performance Race Beat Podcast with me, Richard Stewart, a performance nutritionist and personal trainer. We all know we can get tangled amongst the facts and fads on social media, and so the purpose of this podcast is to bridge the gap between science and practice by having industry experts on all topics performance related. I became a performance nutritionist because of my background in Michelin star restaurants and being a personal trainer, bridging the gap between food and fitness. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Welcome to episode 11 of the Performance Recipe Podcast. Next up, we have Varun Shivdasani, the complete performance chef. With degrees in physiology, nutrition, and culinary, with careers in elite sport in all areas of elite sport for decades, and currently working with the Premier League team, Nottingham Forest.
Thanks so much for joining me on the Performance Recipe Podcast. Met you at the gym. Obviously, we have you in Nottingham Forest. It's an absolute pleasure and honor to have you here. Such a great guy as well, coming to the gym and meeting on the staff down at Pure Gym, where I work PT most of my clients. Can you just tell people about who you are and exactly what you do here in Forest?
So I'm a chef and a nutritionist by trade, but I also have my master's in physiology. So I look after anything to do with food, nutrition, with players for both first team and the academy. Most of my focus on the first thing.
Awesome, yeah. So you are what we call a performance chef.
Yes.
There's not a lot of you around, and that's why I was super surprised when I met you that you were a chef, nutritionist, and physiologist technically. So that is the big reason why I wanted to get you on here today. So can you tell people about what a performance nutritionist / performance chef actually is?
It's a hard one because there's a lot of people calling themselves performance chefs because they work with a professional athletic team or sports team. That's not necessarily the case. I mean, a performance chef is any chef that helps performance in whatever. I mean, however, for me, it needs to be slightly more than just doing maybe a diploma or a course in nutrition, actually understanding what the sport is about and being able to support the other disciplinary functions, SNC, physiotherapy, medical team. There's going to be lots of jargon thrown about when there's injuries, when there's fueling, when there's recovery, etc. You know, you need to be able to understand that to actually truly call yourself, I should just say, to truly call yourself a performance chef. So, having a background in food and nutrition and physiology, I think, is there's constant learning, there's a constant sort of understanding sport in its entirety, and it'd be great to get psychology in there and some sort of qualification, because I suppose that's the only thing missing from it. That would then, you know, I'm not truly a performance chef because I have a psychology that's missing, isn't it? So once that happens, then I will truly be a performance chef.
No, it just shows you how much dedication you have for your profession to go and study a master's, was it both in nutrition and physiology?
Yeah.
And then obviously to become a proper qualified chef, did the culinary degree or qualification?
Yeah, degree.
Exactly. So, and then to go on once you do something in psychology, it tells you a lot about yourself. And so just before this conversation happened, and one of the younger youth academy players, I'm assuming it was a youth academy player that came in, or staff member that came in. So you know everyone by name. So I think that is a massive thing when it comes to like the management of any organization, to know everyone. And how do you find that aspect, maybe working in this sort of environment, knowing the, understanding the players, understanding the staff, not in different age groups as well. And obviously you just spoke about how try to get rid of some of the jargon. How do you communicate that to people? Do you try to simplify it down as easy as possible?
I mean, with my chefs, for example, like today, just early on today, we have a nutrition. I talked to them about nutrition, why we do what we do, because they're essentially at their core chefs. They don't call themselves performance chefs because they're chefs, and they're proud of being chefs and they love food. But it's about streamlining operations so that we're here to fuel and help recover. So I have workshops with them. We talk about nutrition. Today's topic was carbohydrates. Then we're going to go on to things like protein. Obviously, tackle macros first. Then we're going to go on to things like caffeine and supplementation. Creatine, they will inherently just have questions as well. There's a couple of the chefs they train, they'll have to work out, and so they naturally have. One of them just bought gym, it looked really good. And I thought, you know, tap electrolytes. And I'm like, what? Do you really need them?
Mm.
I mean, you're not exactly sweating out 3.5-4 liters an hour. It's like, yeah, but you want hydration. And I was like, okay. Just water.
Yeah.
Just drink water, you know.
Yeah. You
no sodium. There's no real sodium loss when you're just standing around doing a whole heck of a lot. So, yeah, I mean, again, someone like that who's young, trains at the gym 5 times a week, wants to know more, and that's why he's in this environment. You know, he supports Forrest as well. But then they read articles on the internet or Men's Health or wherever, and then they go, oh, yeah, this is really good for you. I mean, Lucozade was developed as an aid. Wasn't developed as like a soft drink to just drink all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So today's topic was carbohydrates, and then I used to veer off into tangents. Not tangents, which all naturally happens, but we have a good team. So when you ask me how do I communicate without a jargon, it's about bringing to, rather than trickling down, it's about bringing up. So you know, working, getting workshops in, you can create a healthy man, their knowledge, and you know. Just sharing knowledge is universal. Yeah, we need to know. And they're in this environment either because they want to learn and they want to grow and they don't want to just remain trapped. So,
yeah, it shows you what kind of environment that you're working in. For everyone will have these aspirations to learn all the time. That's not just going to benefit them and their own careers, but obviously the greater product, that's, which is going to be, I suppose, the youth and then eventually the first team.
Yeah.
So that's quite admirable in itself, but. Talking about macros, calories, how do you tailor your meal plans around your different athletes or youth versus the older athletes, or isn't there really much of a difference?
Well, there is, because, I mean, variety of sports, I've worked at variety of sports now, and I don't think it's our position to really sit there and, I mean, athletes need education. They need to be educated because at the end of the day, they're only here for a certain amount of time, whether it's here or the Elite Athlete Center or else before. They are going to go home at some point. They are going to go on holiday at some point. So it's about educating them, empowering them to make the right decisions. So they should be aware of their training load. They should be aware of whether they're feeling the fueling phase or a recovery phase. So everything, regardless of where I've worked, it's been a case of providing pure carb and pure protein, and then they should know what their plate should look like. I mean, if you have a round plate, for example, your plate should be round anyway. It's easier to look at the pie chart, the macros that way there. Like, you know, 50% carb, 35% protein. Everything we serve is 50% carb. So how you make up 50% of your plate, whether it's a bit of rice and a little bit of potato, a little bit of pasta, that's how. I mean, so it's at the Elite Athlete Center, for example, you could have an American football player, a rugby player, a swimmer, a gymnast, a hockey player. I mean, it's virtually impossible to sit there and ask every single one, okay, what did you do? What did you do today? What are you going to do? Because most elite sports will be doing multiple sessions a day instead of one session. So they could essentially come in from recovering from the morning session, but that meal they're having is actually also fueling for the next session. So we can't, if you're serving 200 people, imagine spending, maybe even if it's like 2 or 3 minutes, what have you done? What are you going to do? But then it goes deeper than that. What is your BMI? What's your BMR? It has to be very individual. So rather than spend, okay, are you a defender? Are you a striker? Are you a midfielder? Are you a goalkeeper? You should really know and have control of what your plate should look like. You know, so, but in terms of provision, everything's provided that will give you what you need, regardless of what status you're in, whether you're fueling, recovering, whether you've had a high load day, a low load day, medium load day, everything's there. You just need to figure out how much and what promotion you're going to eat.
Yeah, so I suppose in order for them to actually understand what they have to have, they would have been educated from a very young age, I'm assuming. So do you find that when you speak to some of the elite athletes, the guys a little bit older, like 18 onwards, do you feel like speaking to them in simple terms, like eat your carbs, macros, proteins, is maybe not that in depth? Or do these guys already have, or do they just not have a very good nutritional background? I'm not saying just forest, but just athletes in general that you've worked with.
I think it depends on the athletes. You'll have, okay, again, regardless of sport, you have people who are naturally talented at their sport, gifted, who want to do nothing but play that sport. So they're not really concerned about the extra stuff. Then you have athletes who are really interested in it. And where the sort of magic happens is when you have an influential player who also embraces every other aspect of the sport outside of the training itself. So they embrace the physiotherapy, they embrace massage, they embrace the therapies, they embrace the nutrition, they embrace the food. And that influential player starts doing, whether they're interested in the dressing room or outside the dressing room, then they start, this is a lifestyle, isn't it? You have to do it all. And to answer that question, I'd say, rather than look at the sport, look at the athlete. And that's where the psychology comes in. So are they fully embracing everything that comes with it? Or are they only interested? There are some people who only want to go out, train, go back and play Xbox and do nothing else, and they're not interested in the rest of it. So you have to address the person rather than the athlete. So regardless of the level, whether it's elite or not, talk about older athletes. Yes, you would think they'd be younger. Yeah, it'd be easier to start at a younger age because that's their formative years, and that's when you're shaping their thinking and how they should think. But there's some who are intrinsically not bothered about any of that,
yeah.
And they'll still go in and perform unbelievably well. The problem then happens when there's an injury, you know, because they have. And you have the benefit of youth and the resilience of youth, and the recovery times are shorter, healing times are quicker. But what happens is you start getting older. And longevity is where I think it plays a part. So you might extend your playing career. You know, if you've got a 10-year playing career, you might look at the Ryan Giggs of today, and you look at Ronaldo, who's still playing at a super high level at the age where most other players are not. You know? So.
Yeah, so having someone like Ronaldo, I suppose, when he was at United, is one of those players that you talk about who's quite influential, depending on who you speak to, should have had a more impact on the team because of all the different areas of his performance that he looks at, and then hopefully that gets passed down onto the other players.
Yeah, leading by example, but not doesn't necessarily have to even be that. It could just be a really strong character. It's about leadership, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So if, but it'll always be a percentage. You'll get a percentage of players who will buy in immediately, regardless of what you do. You could just say, oh, next week we're having nothing but carrots. And they'll be like, oh, that sounds great. And they'll do it. Then you've got the ones that are sitting on the fence going, questioning it, but they would do it. And the other ones who just wouldn't do it, regardless of how much incentive you give them, they're not bothered about it. So there are. And then hopefully the group, the first two groups you talk about, the ones that can then influence the other ones who might do it just to follow along. But yeah, it's a hard dynamic because in team sports, individual sport is different also. It's different between football and Olympic sport, Paralympic sport. I mean, again, Olympic, Paralympic funding happens based on how they perform in previous Olympic games. So you could have, let's say, British swimming, who didn't do well, and the funding from that will be taken and given to, let's say, cycling, who did really well. So now, for the next Olympic cycle, 4 years now, British swimming, if they have access to a full-time nutritionist, a full-time chef, they don't have money for that anymore. So now they've got to. So it's very different. Team sport is different. Individual sport is different. And in the for the most part, individual sport is somewhat easier because the individuals who are consistently meddling, you will find that they're the ones that genuinely have a thirst for more knowledge. They have a thirst for information. They have a thirst for improving themselves. And that's a very individual trait. Track and field, or swimming, or gymnastics. And when you look at team sports, then you find that dynamic of a certain group of people certain group who will buy it. Might be short, see how it goes, and then the last few that all they want to do is play hockey or play football.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're talking about like talking about carrots earlier, and someone might say like, let's just eat a bunch of carrots, and then, and you were saying earlier that some people might eat unbelievably well, do everything right, and others who might not do as well, but they still go out and perform like a god on the field. So I was wondering, what are the key nutritional components you like to focus on specifically for athletic performance?
I mean, I'm getting adequate calories is the main thing. Make sure you get enough calories. I mean, calories seems to have got such a bad rap. The word calories seems to have all gone too many calories. But getting adequate calories is the number one priority. Then the next level down is getting it in a certain ratio of macros that either support fueling or recovery, depending on what your target is, depending on what time of day it is, depending on what training session you've got coming up. So those are two, adequate calories and macros. And as a chef, obviously, making that as exciting as possible, because I couldn't be serving carrots every single day, and then after a week, people are just going to go, shove it, because they're not going to want to eat it. So I think that's the, I mean, food and nutrition go hand in hand. So, you know, while you can get somebody to lose weight just by eating kale every single day, that is not a lifestyle. So you need to be able to create a lifestyle that's fun, because and that's conducive to longevity. People then buy into it and do it for life rather than just for a season or for a month or for a week. So if I can create grandma's favorite pumpkin pie, but in my version, that meets the spec we're trying to achieve in terms of nutrition, but it tastes as good as your grandma's pumpkin pie. Yeah.
Magic. Yeah. Wicked. So you try to teach them how to incorporate their own dietary habits, whether it be cultural or specific to that individual. Like now, when I say specific to the individual, I mean obviously some people just have general preferences. But now, do you find that you have to be very creative, because obviously within a team, especially on the international scale, where you've got different groups of guys coming from different ethnicities or different cultural backgrounds, do you find that there's a lot of work that goes on between like trying to meet all those needs as well?
Yeah, but generally speaking, you know, when you approach developing a menu, I mean, this is a whole we can talk about this for days, but when you're developing a menu, you are trying to broadly offer something that appeals to everybody. So you've got spicy options, because some people like spicy, you've got non-spicy options, some people don't like spicy. You've got, generally speaking, you notice the trend. You know, and again, it's not sports specific, or you look at the age group, you say, okay, I can tell you now whether a person is into sport, not into sport, between the age of 17 and 25, they love Nando's. They're gonna love Nando's. So if I can create that sort of food here within a certain athletic performance spec, then I know it's gonna appeal to everyone.
Cool.
Because regardless of background or culture, I know whether you're Scottish or African or Caribbean or Jamaican or Indian or whatever, you know you're gonna like a Nando's if you're moving that, you know. Similarly, you look at what are the top foods when you talk about food profiles. Italian, Thai, Indian, Chinese. These are the restaurants that are flourishing. If you make it a menu developed around those food profiles, you're gonna
win. Yeah, 100%. So you're talking about calories in, calories out, and how calories have got a bad rep now. So people, you look at calories and think that, oh, it's a measurement for weight gain or weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
So people understand energy balance to a pretty standard level. I'm assuming you obviously know quite a lot about energy availability as well. So like how many calories are left over. When you do look at energy expenditure versus energy intake. So do you find that in order for game days, you're obviously upping the calories, and then is it like, so game day minus one, minus two, carbohydrates are starting to go up a bit more. Do you speak to the players about this kind of stuff and make them understand like why they're having more carbohydrates? Do you look at having a certain percentage of macros for regular physiological functions such as like hormones? And do you look at that kind of detail at all?
Yeah, I mean, again, but that's then we start looking at sort of gender differences, looking at female versus male, and a lot of studies, most studies out there done with male subjects. There's not a lot of research on female subjects. It is changing now. But yeah, there is periodization of carbohydrates depending on match day minus, whatever it is, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. But rather than sort of like leading up to a match day, it revolves more, again, like we spoke about, training loads on that day itself. So supporting what's just happened and that's looking forward to what's happening in the next following days. So it will vary as well. I can't say a whole lot about what happens here, but my secrets.
So when it comes to what other strategies do you have to help athletes with dietary needs, if they were to be like vegan or vegetarian? Because obviously it's a lot harder for someone that is a vegan or vegetarian to get enough protein in, but the carbohydrate side of things is a lot easier, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if you, there was Game Changers, there was a documentary called Game Changers, and like a week after that, the BBC asked me to do a little chat with them, because we were looking after cricket, and a lot of the cricket women, they were like, Chef, obviously Game Changers, I'm becoming vegan, and overnight, why have half the squad become vegan? And I was like, what's going on here? Again, it's annoying because you have, your people like, okay, Usain Bolt and Arnold Schwarzenegger all going, oh yeah, I'm vegan, I love it. But Usain Bolt wasn't vegan when he was breaking world records, 100 meters. Schwarzenegger wasn't Mr. Universe on a vegan diet. So I've had so many vegan, vegetarian athletes in the past, and what's good is the quality and variety of protein options for them has improved vastly. I mean, in the States, it's just amazing. The variety is unbelievable. I mean, you could eat quite easy. I mean, of course, a lot of it is fortified, they'll fortify stuff. Especially with beans, which are efficient and vegans. So that was one way of getting it in. But there was if you start looking at muscle protein synthesis, there was a study done with corn, and it's a single, solitary study, but showed promising results in terms of the muscle protein synthesis response. And it didn't come anywhere close to what animal source of protein is, but it was probably the best. So what we, I use corn quite a lot. The head of development at Corn is quite a cool guy, and some of the corn products that are coming out are pretty cool in terms of texture and flavor and consistency, etc. So then there's crazy stuff happening, like 3D printed meat. Now, I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah, no, I haven't. That's crazy.
It's synthetically making meat.
What on earth is going on?
That's crazy.
Yeah, so in terms of, so obviously you've spoken now a bit about protein obviously is going to help with that main adaptations, I suppose, but what about micronutrients, and what would you say micronutrients' role is in athletic performance?
I mean, it's all just macros, obviously the calories you need, but the micros take care of everything else, so all the metabolic functions, you look at all the vitamins, all the minerals. There's any studies using isolated, there's lots of vitamin C studies, there's lots of zinc studies, etc. And if you look at immunology and athletic performance, again, all of the studies, this is the problem I think there is between academics and practitioners. Academics base their studies on recreational athletes, on elite sport. Getting elite participants is very difficult, and getting elite participants for a prolonged period of time to conduct a study is even more difficult. So it's much easier to have recreational athletes. But the problem with that is recreational athletes don't have the physiology that elite athletes do. So while you might see a trend in recreational athletes that says, okay, yeah, vitamin C wards off colds, helps immune system, zinc, and all that stuff, it may be true in gen pop, but when you start talking about elite sport, then it doesn't really make a difference. And you might actually even see the reverse trend, and that's what makes an elite, I suppose. Is their physiology is just different. That's why 1 in 6,000 will make it to an elite level. It's just simply over why a Jamaican sprinter is unbelievable, why divers, I think it's in the Philippines, why are they the best, some of the best free divers. It's just over generations and decades, the physiology and the genetics has changed. So similarly, and I think the reason elite athletes are elite is because their physiology is elite. It's elite to general population. So, but having said that, we do need to focus on macronutrients. I mean, the food first approach, obviously, we try and eat the rainbow, not Skittles. But whole fruits and veg and smoothies and juices and, you know, and then everything else is covered with supplements and supplementation. So vitamins, multivitamin or vitamin D, especially living in the UK, you know, vitamin D, huge. You're South African, so you know.
Yeah.
So you must suffer every year.
Oh, I get tired every time the sun goes down, which is, well, every time the sun is behind those clouds, which is about 3/4 of the year.
Yeah. So, you know, so micronutrients have massive amounts of help, regardless of whether it leads or not.
Yeah, so you're saying, so there's a lot of studies around, obviously, like you've already mentioned, vitamin C helping with immune function, zinc can help with upper respiratory tract infections. So you're saying for, even though the studies are showing that now, showing that for a while, are you saying that with the elite athletes, it's not quite as simple as that?
It is. I mean, again, simply because the subjects and participants in these studies are general population.
Mm.
So missing a training day is probably, so what happens on a match day is it's too late, right? So you have got to, as a practitioner, make sure the quality of training sessions are the highest it could possibly be. So it's the lead up to the match day, that's important. So you miss a training session because of illness or injuries, obviously, unavoidable, but if you miss a session due to illness, the repercussions on the match day are going to be massive. So we have to kind of make sure that the environment is fairly sterile. You know, if someone comes and coughing or something, they sat home with me, you think. Because you know, a virus is a virus, it's going to be unavoidable, it has to run its course.
Mm.
If it's bacterial, of course, you need antibiotics and all that stuff. You're still missing training sessions, and you're missing out on having quality training sessions, which then will affect the match day.
Mm.
Always a competition day, match day, whether you're long jumping, high jumping, whatever it is, if you missed, I forget what the statistic is, but it was like something like, I have to find the statistic, but it was quite interesting. It came up, and there's a Dr. Letty Bishop who's she was advisor to the government during COVID, for some COVID related studies. Amazing in her field, and she was talking about, you know, I think literally we went through all the popular vitamin C and zinc and all that, and said, okay, studies with gen pop, great. Studies with elite athletes, not so good.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no definitive result when it comes to elite.
Yeah, so it takes a lot of push and shove, like, as in like learning on the spot almost with each individual elite athlete, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, but because there's such a decent, at the elite level, you know, the multidisciplinary approach is so good that they have the support that you need to sort of still make things happen. Otherwise, you, normal general population, will not have access to either the facilities or the equipment or the personnel or staff to be able to accelerate any sort of recovery. Yeah.
Yeah. That's essentially what this podcast is actually about, because I just realized there's so much misinformation on social media that I wanted to get people, like athletes have a full team behind them, a multidisciplinary team, whereas general population have to spend loads of money or if they want to get any close to something like that. And that's what this podcast is, get all sorts of different types of professionals like yourself who are educated in the field and don't just practice in the field, and truly have all the knowledge within their craft to be able to give the right sort of information. Because people really don't understand, like, there's the physiology aspects you've got to look at when it comes to training, whether it be hypertrophy, strength, endurance, there's the nutrition side. Both of them work hand in hand, but you also mentioned psychology, hydration, which I think I'll get onto in a bit. And then you've also touched on muscle recovery and just injuries in general. Now, being a nutritionist and a chef, how do you, from your side of the profession, how do you combat that kind of thing? When you're injured, should you be having less calories? Should you be having less protein because you're not training as much? And how does it work?
I mean, the whole energy balance model will play a part in it, because it's not so much, well, it is about the injury. It's what happens once the athlete is up and running again. So you don't want to have a massive gap between full recovery to then getting them back into condition for a game day or match day. But yes, there will be a slight reduction in overall calories because they're not spending as much. But you will, depending on what kind of injury it is as well. I mean, if it's skeletal, if it's musculoskeletal, or it's just muscular or soft tissue, or and there's various things, you know, you look at things like collagen, you look at things like increased protein intake for repair. But it's, again, so individual. It's such an individual thing. I don't think you can just blanket say, well, when an injury happens, do this, because it has to be, they might still be able to, if it's a lower limb injury, they might still be able to do stuff, upper limb, a hand bike, you know, upper body weights, etc., in which case there's still expenditure, and then you have to then match the calories to support that expenditure and then recover from that, from the session. So again, it's an individual. I get this all the time, because if I go to a party, I'll just like people, oh, you have the inevitable conversation of, oh, what do you do? And the people go, what's the best diet for me? I don't really know. I don't really know what the best diet is. What do you do? Do you train? Do you not train? Do you train aerobically? Do you train anaerobically? Are you an endurance athlete? Do you like to swim? Do you like to do ballet? I mean, I can't sit there and go have prawns. Prawns are great for you because you might be allergic to prawns. So it's so many moving parts to it. Allergies, likes, dislikes. What is your BMR? What is your BMI? What are your training loads? How many times a week do you train? What do you do for a job? And similarly, you have to treat every injury as a unique case, because it is unique.
Yeah, like so many people look at influencers online and say, this person had this meal in a day, or these five meals in the day, I'm gonna eat exactly like them to look like them. Like, no, people don't understand. Your resting metabolic rate, your basal metabolic rate, it's gonna be completely different depending on height, muscle mass, bone mineral density, energy expenditure, whether it be from exercise or just regular steps. All of this has a part to play. Someone sitting at a desk job versus someone who runs every day is gonna have two totally different energy expenditures.
Exactly. I mean, you've got swimmers who could be eating 10,000 calories a day, or you could have a hockey player who has 3,000 calories a day. You could have a hockey player male who's 6'6", 105 kilos, 8% body fat, as opposed to another hockey player who's a female with 20% body fat. And so it's like, how can you prescribe the same thing? You can't do it. It's just impossible. And you can't. You have to have a tailor-made. I mean, listen, if you want general results, you can Google general results. You know, you can do it yourself. But if you want, you think about sprinting. trying to improve a sprinter's time by a tenth of a second. You're not trying to make someone run 100 meters. Mm-hmm. If you want to make someone run 100 meters, they run 100 meters. If you want to run, make them run 100 meters under 10 seconds, it changes things totally, doesn't it?
Yeah, because obviously, yeah, you want to be the lightest, or the most highest muscle to weight ratio, I suppose, in that specific context. And you want to be as quick as you possibly can as well. You want to have this carbohydrate, anything more than 10 seconds. So creatine would want to be one of those things that you would want in that kind of situation.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, then you also say, pay attention to your electrolytes, you pay attention to the cognitive side of it and the response of the nervous system. Because when that gun goes off, what is your reaction time from that gun going off to getting off the starting blocks? That's, you know, and the psychology of it, how, you know, yeah, there's so much that goes into it, so much. Because you could have Usain Bolt, and that's a terrible start. What if he starts and he stumbles and he falls? He's lost that race.
Yeah.
So, or a hurdler, it's a hurdle, it falls.
Yeah.
The favorite can, you know, you can, that's why I was saying to you, you can prepare everything. When it gets to the competition day, it's too late. It's what you've done, you've moved up to it. That really matters.
Absolutely. And speaking about, obviously, exercise is a massive topic here. And that causes things like inflammation. And people might think, oh my God, inflammation is really bad. I need to get rid of inflammation. So two questions. One, how do we reduce inflammation? And two, do we need to reduce inflammation in the context of becoming stronger and fitter?
Just a quick break. If you find this information useful, please like, subscribe, and send this to a friend. Otherwise, let's get back to the conversation.
Right, so inflammation is not a bad thing. I mean, free radicals are not a bad thing. You know, people say, oh, antioxidants, I have 10 cups of green tea a day because it's loaded, it's a great antioxidant. But why is oxidative stress bad? Because why do we exercise? I mean, you have to ask that question first. What is exercise? Exercise is putting your body under duress, under stress. And the reason we put under stress is because we want adaptation to occur. Because without adaptation, there's no progress. So if you stop the stress stimulus, you're going to stop the adaptation. So, I mean, I had AJ for 8 months, and he was like having ice baths, cold water immersion, like every day, and because he had seen something on the internet. This is where it gets hard because you're competing. Trying to combat all the nonsense that's out there on the information superhighway. And nobody's saying cold water immersion is, I mean, again, there's pro and cons, and there's studies that show pro results and studies that show there's not really any benefit. But in terms of strength adaptation, that's probably one of the worst things you can do. In terms of injury, fine. Yeah, you know, cold compression, etc., it's great, but in terms of adaptation, it's not great. So it has a purpose. You can't just sit there and go, oh yeah, cold water immersion is great. When do you use it? What do you use it for? What's the best way to do it? And all of these questions need to be answered, not just, you know, I'm saying, I could say, oh yeah, wheatgrass is great for you. I'm going to have wheatgrass every single day, 20 times a day. Well, why? Just because it's good for you. It just makes no sense. So, to answer your question, inflammation is not a bad thing. Half my career was spent with elite sports, and a lot, big chunk of my career was also spent with wellness resorts, etc. Right? So, people where they. And then when we start talking about longevity and health in general, then there are certain things that you start questioning that are done in the athletic performance field that actually go against the grain when we're talking about health. So so there are times I have conflict in my head when I go, this is great for athletic performance. Let's take carbohydrates, for example, right? And you say, glucose and sucrose and the high glycemic index sugars, carbohydrate gels. great, because we're trying to just delay the substrate running out, the carbohydrate running out of the fuel. But it's also, cancer cells love glucose and sucrose as well. That's what causes them to grow. So let's just say we won't really know, maybe there is a cancerous cell in our body, and now we're out of an athlete, and we're loving the glucose, which is feeding our brains, brain loves it, muscles love it, but it's also feeding the cell. And then, if you're playing, and 3 years later you realize, shit, I've got a tumor, that's the size of a tennis ball, and what's been feeding it is the glucose, right? So it's a bit of a catch-22. So we can look at performance. You might have a great career for 30, 35 years, but then by 40, you've got a tumor that you've also failed. So it's one of those situations where I find myself completely, because the part of me that has spent time in wellness resorts with some unbelievable practitioners in the wellness field, does make me stop, pause, and think sometimes when I have to do things in the athletic performance arena. But inflammation, so like if you went to a spa, they'd say inflammation is very bad for you. It's hard, inflammatory, But in an athletic performance and an adaptation sense, inflammation is not bad for you. So it depends, I guess, who you're talking to.
Yeah, because inflammation in the acute sense can look quite bad, but in the long term, it actually has massive benefits. Stronger muscles, pressure on your joints and your bones, osteoblasts start to work off. So stronger bones. We spoke about this with a physiotherapist for Team GB Aquatics, and you're talking about like how someone had a lower limb injury, so they might do something on the bike where they can use their arms. And just because you have an injury shouldn't mean that you should just stop doing exercise altogether. And focus on nutrition and doing some sort of exercise, like getting exercise from a physio specifically, can actually help repair that muscle a lot quicker. And speaking on that topic, which is kind of swaying away, which people talk about collagen a lot. I just want to know quickly your opinion on collagen, because there's mixed reviews I'm getting from the research, and that is you get your collagen 1 hour beforehand, and that can actually help with the tendons during exercise, or what do you have any knowledge?
I use collagen. I've used collagen for a long time. I put it in jellies, I put it in shakes and smoothies, whatever, etc. But it's one of those top up things, like bone broths, etc. Look, you've got to, again, I can pick up any topic today and I'll find papers that are pro and papers that are con. You talk about hydration and athletic drinking versus a prescribed drinking routine. And there's going to be arguments pro and against both schools of thought. I'm obviously with a prescribed school of thought, and similarly, you're going to find collagen. But my answer is, look, if it is helping even 1%, it's all those 1% that are going to add up to 10% and then help performance. And even if that 1% is placebo, it's helping the psychological aspect of it, saying, if the athlete, and the brain is a fascinating, amazing organ, and if the brain is thinking healing is happening, does actually in fact accelerate healing, why not?
Yeah.
So the whole placebo effect, and I'm all for it. I'm all for, like, hey, listen, as long as it's not a banned substance, that's a whole long subject, because they have Olympics that is now been sponsored that allows everything.
Yeah, enhanced games, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm all for that as well, because I'm sitting there going, let's see a human being run 100 meters in under 6 seconds. Like, why not? Let's see what the human body can do when it's given every bit of help or every aid out there possible. Let's see what it can do. Bring it on, So.
Yeah. Who knows what could be accomplished with the enhanced games? There's a lot of athletes who obviously get caught during the Olympics. Do you think that there will be that much of a difference considering some people do get away with it under the radar, do you really think there will be a significant difference?
I don't know. I mean, that's like sport, there's a whole political side to sport that I don't really want to. I still would like to think of sport as pure, but there is a whole political side to it. I mean, look at the Russian, the Russian Federation, and it's a powerlifting and all that. You know, there's countries out there that have no or little regulation. Of course, you know all about Armstrong and Tour de France and, you know, cycling. But I, that's all Ted says to me. But yeah, let's get like all of them. We know everybody's doing it, but let's see what can do that human potential. I want to explore the human boundaries and human potential. So give them all the roads they want, all the everything that they want to do, and let's see how fast or big or strong or whatever you can get. I mean, that'd be quite cool to see.
Yeah, literally the Marvel and DC comics coming to life.
Yeah. Let's have a look at Superman.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, because obviously some of the people that will be listening to this are general pop, and there's obviously a lot of questions about what they should be eating pre, post exercise. So some people get up at like 5 a.m. and they don't have much time to go and cook a full English breakfast or whatever before going out onto work and then the gym or the gym and at work, whatever. What kind of things would you prescribe in, I don't know, maybe the gym context, but maybe even to the elite athletes, pre and post exercise, depending on the time that they have?
I mean, planning is a huge part. It goes back to the first thing we talked about, which is it being a lifestyle. And that's where it needs to be, because when it becomes a lifestyle, that's when you are willing to put in the time to plan for all this. So if you know you're going to be up at 5 in the morning, do your breakfast night before. Make yourself a overnight oats night before, just put in the fridge so you know when you're up, you can take it with you. There isn't an excuse, because once you plan everything else. Think of it, when you're going on holiday, you plan everything. You plan where you're staying, what car you're renting, where you're going to pick up from, what hotel you're staying in, what time your flight is, all that stuff. There's still people out there who miss their flights, but similar to a holiday, this is like a lifelong, well, it's not a holiday, it's a lifelong trip.
Yeah.
It's a lifelong trip, and you have to plan for it. So you say, when you say all people don't have much time, they're waking up, do it the night before. And if you're going to work, you know, have your lunch packed up the night before. And we live in a time where there's so many meal prep companies, and okay, let's say you don't want the complete meal. You can get Gusto boxes which sell you the ingredients. If you start a love for cooking, you don't have to go shopping. The ingredients will come to you, the recipe cards come to you. You can and if you can afford it, get a personal chef. I mean, in today's day and age, there's no excuse not to be able to. All the tools are there for you to be living a decent, good, healthy, fit lifestyle. You just have to make that decision. You have to sit there and go, I'm going to be going out getting absolutely wasted this weekend. Or do I save that and spend it on something else? So it's our choices at the end of the day.
Yeah, now so many people come to me and they say, oh, I can't afford like PTing, for example, coaching in general, and depending on what package you go for, depends on the price, obviously. But then you break it down into how many pints people have on the weekend.
Yeah.
And it's quadruple, literally quadruple. And then you've got the takeaways, and then you've got then you've got everything else that it might get up to as well.
Yeah.
And it accumulates to a lot, and it's like, that's your life, you know? And then people don't realize the effect that alcohol will have, not just on sleep, because I think some people that can be quite obvious, and which obviously is going to reduce your performance in every possible aspect you can imagine. But then also things like muscle protein synthesis.
Mm-hmm.
So people need to have a trade-off there. Like, what is more important to you? I have a lot of people coming to me for, like, let's say a fat loss journey, and they're saying like, Richard, I'm trying to stick to the 80-20 rule, but like, I just, and then they'll misquote me and say, there's no way I'm gonna completely stop drinking alcohol. And it's like, it's baby steps. I have a guy who's 203 kilograms, dropped 50 kg now. And if you look at his diet, you'll think this is the worst diet I've ever seen. And this is the diet I've actually given him, because he never ate a fruit for like 10 years.
Wow.
And I've had to teach him how to eat. beans and peas and put it into his mashed potatoes, so you, and then pour it with gravy, so he gets used to getting those kind of nutrients in. And I've done baby steps now. Get rid of the mashed potato and have it by itself. Okay, what greens do you like? What leaves do you like? And start literally treating him like a child, and then progressing that as we progress with our coaching as well.
It starts at home. It starts at home because he's probably grown up in a diet of chips and Donald's and, you know. And as a parent, I'm a parent. As a parent, my son has never eaten McDonald's or KFC or and he doesn't even. And I'm not sitting there saying, because I do what I do, I'm forcing him. If he said to me tomorrow, I want to try McDonald's, I'll take him. You know? He's not interested in it. He's not interested in fizzy drinks. He's not interested in. He drinks water. He loves water. And he loves. But growing up, ever since he was a baby, he basically blended our food and gave it to him. So he got those flavors ever since he was a child. He got the veg and the fruit and the fruit and the, not all in one. So he had his fruit blend and then he had his meal blends, which was, you know, chicken and the veg that we were cooking, and whether it's leafy veg. He loves vegetables, he loves fruit. And it does start at home. The habits start at home. So if you're going to be, it is laziness. There's one word for it, it's laziness.
Mm.
And laziness is the root of so many problems. Because if you're lazy, you're not going to prep your meal the night before. You're not going to exercise. You're not going to, and that, they go hand in hand. You know, so Lewis James, who's one of the hydration experts in the world, he was my tutor for my master's. And he used to say, it's quite cool, it's something that stuck with me. He says, learn as Muffet, salad, Tuffet, eating in curves away. She was eating well. It was easy eating whey and curd, protein all the time. She wasn't the size of Ronnie Coleman, because it's not just enough eating the curd whey. What you need to do is exercise for that muscle protein synthesis to happen.
Mm.
So it's the stimulus is the exercise.
Yeah.
So it is both parts. It's nutrition and exercise, not just one on its own. There are people out there who will say, oh, no, I eat really well, but still I'm putting on weight. Like, what do you do for exercise? Nothing. So they think just by eating well, they're going to look amazing. Nah, you've got to do the other part as well.
Mm-hmm. People don't understand the stimulus, like when it comes to hypertrophy specifically, people are like, oh, if I eat loads of protein, I'm going to build more muscle, I'm going to gain more muscle mass. Like, no, you have to do the stimulus. It's protein helps. I don't quite put a percentage on it, but it's not down to solely protein. You have to put resistance. You have to cause the inflammation that I spoke about earlier. And then, the protein, the carbohydrates, the calories, whatever, they're going to aid in that process.
Yeah.
And the same thing with creatine. And what was it? Someone said, when it came to the enhanced gains that we were speaking about earlier, and talking about things like creatine, just came to my mind. It's like, if anything was good enough to become have significant performance increases, it would be illegal. So like earlier you were talking about like having these little things that might make someone feel a little bit better. I can't remember what the example was used now, but like cupping is another example that a lot of players talking about. Placebo. And so Anthony Joshua was having the ice baths. And then there's the cupping side of things. Like sometimes even if it does give you a placebo, like still gonna help, but those things not necessarily are going to help, but it's the mind. If the mind is happy, and you can push yourself through different situations, I suppose you can accomplish pretty much anything. And that and that doesn't just happen with the adaptations; it also happens with your decision making. And if you don't get into it's building habits. If you don't get into the habit of prepping those meals the night before, you don't get into the habit of eating your fruit and your vegetables and having enough protein in a day, you're just shooting yourself in the foot for the long term, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then moving on from that, we were talking about travel as well. So I was just wondering, like, what are your travel tips? Like, what do you say to people and players in general in terms of like hydration, fueling right? How do they get their protein in? Like, how do you travel?
I mean, at the elite level, there'll always be an acclimation period. So where are you traveling to? How hot is it? Is it in the UK? Obviously, we have the benefit of the climate, vitamin D. Apart, I mean, in terms of temperature and humidity, it's quite conducive to performance at a high level. But what happens when you travel to a polar climate? World Cup in Qatar. You know, what happens when you... And boxing now is crazy. A lot of it's happening in Saudi Arabia. So you will have to travel and battle. What do you say? This is, well, yeah, well, fail to prepare, prepare, fail, right? So planning. So hydration, sleep, because you have to adjust to time zones, etc. Your whole your body clock. And then just continue. You may not have access to certain brands of food. Years ago, in one of the wellness resorts, we had a family that were vegan and kosher, and they only had the soya brand tofu, for example. And the resort was in the Caribbean, in the West Indies. And my neighboring island, which provided all my supplies, was French. So I could only get French products. And this family came in, and you know, they never travel on holiday, this is their first holiday, because they never trusted anyone to cook for them.
Well,
so extremely wealthy family, I would say. So they came in, and then the lady said, can I just see what you bought in terms of ingredients? The walk-in. I said, oh, no, we can't have this. We only have this brand, so this brand. And I was like, well, sorry, but this is all I can get from my suppliers, because it's all French product. They said, well, if you don't mind, our jet's waiting. If you just fly to Miami, just shop. So I actually went to the plane and flew to Miami with the pilot, and two stewardesses went around supermarket buying both brands that they do have. Jesus, got back in the plane, came back. So you talk about planning and what are we talking about now?
We're literally about travel and nutrition.
Traveling,
so that's
traveling
crazy.
Nutrition.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you have the means and the money, of course, that's not cool. But planning is, again, whether it's your individual life and meal prepping and planning your individual days or traveling abroad. I mean, a lot of people, and you'll see this, a lot of even recreational athletes who are training in the gym. I have friends who will not. Me till not so long ago, I would not stay in a hotel with an average. So I'm planning, so I would rather pay an extra 20, 30 quid a night, as long as my gym, the hotel I was staying in on a holiday had a gym, so I was still training. And there are people who will plan things like that, so there are the planners, and you can see those are the ones that are successful. Again, that puts you in a whole different category of people that maybe obsessive compulsive. You know, take a break, it's good, relax, it's healing, it's good for you. My dad used to say to me, he said, oh, you just shook in the head, you know, because I was OCD about all this and many other things that I thought was like, oh man. And yeah, my body fat was some 10% and I was ripped and I was, you know, all out. But was not a happy person. I was denying myself so many things. So don't get to that extreme either. The ratio and balance. And then what helped with me is fatherhood, obviously, because my father and son does want donuts and things like that. So it's been a blessing in many ways. But again, going back to digress.
That's cool.
And the travel, just plan. Be aware of the climate you are traveling to. So if you are training, there will be certain hot weather. You need to consider like hydration, electrolytes, sodium, etc. The foods that you are used to at home may not be available, so plan for that. You know, what are the alternatives to your research? And get familiar with the local cuisines and cultures. And the world is a smaller place now anyway. Regardless of where you go, you're going to find products that you can eat. It's always going to be chicken available. It's always going to be rice available. You know,
staples.
Yeah, the staples are going to be available. And especially, it depends again on where you're staying. If you're staying in a 5-star hotel, because chances are they're flying in food from 3,000 miles away to make your sushi, you know, from Japan. So, whether that again, on the whole can of worms, is that really cool if your pineapples are being picked 3 to 2 weeks ago, flown across marine and then being gassed and ripened?
Yeah, well, in that kind of context as well, do you think it's a good idea to carry supplements? And do you think supplements, whether it be for travel or for performance, has a part to play as well? Whether it be things like whey protein, for example, say that is a real food, or whether it be an omega-3 fatty acid tablet. Do you think, do you have an approach for supplementation? When do you think it's necessary?
Sure, yes, I believe in supplements, but they are exactly that. They are a supplement. So food first, and they supplement food. Almost every team I know travels with supplements. Again, maybe brands that they used to, brands that trust, not with WADA and you can, anti-doping, etc. It's important to have informed sport products. So yes, I'm all for supplements. They were developed to aid athletic performance, and I'm all for them. Yeah, so travel with your supplements. Yeah, definitely.
Good. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. And then in terms of gut health, do you have much of a focus when it comes to maybe your own nutrition, but also to the athlete's nutrition when it comes to specifically gut health, and how can that impact performance? Because there's obviously,
huge. I mean, all your absorption, assimilation, all that stuff happens in the gut. So having intestinal flora or gut flora that's supporting optimal absorption, assimilation is huge. And not every, so many, many years ago, there was this whole concept of designer probiotics. So designer probiotics. So figuring out your pH and what, which, it's so weird we said this because I attended a probiotic seminar 2 weeks ago online. There's a strain of bacteria that's now, I have to get notes, I'll send it to you. That it's available in the US, not come to Europe yet, but it is a bacteria that actually aids athletic performance.
Wow.
That's what the V. You know, there's like hundreds of different bacteria that make up. But then the designer probiotic concept was figuring out which family of bacteria would best suit you, and then prescribe probiotics that were specific to you. Yeah. So I'm all for probiotics. It's not even a question.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And also, talking about probiotics, I'm not sure how far your knowledge goes into the probiotic side of things, but the recommended intake of probiotics versus what we get on the shelf from the shops is not enough, is it? And a lot of the time, it's half of what you should be having.
But it's the same even with a lot of micronutrients. So
yeah.
The companies that are making vitamins, etc., will always err on the side of caution. So they'll be overly cautious, because the last thing they want is vitamin D or vitamin A toxicities. The amounts you need to have for toxicity to have is ridiculous amounts.
Mm.
But still, you know, we live in the world of lawsuits and all that kind of stuff. So nobody's going to take chances.
Yeah. And then how do you integrate technology and nutritional tracking into the tools that you use here, for example? Do you do that? Or
technology, and that's the other bit that's working in parallel to athletic performance. Not just nutrition, but it's clothing, apparel, etc. So, I use a nutritional analysis software to develop recipes.
Wow.
Because if I have a player, let's say I have a player who comes and says, I'll give you a good example. So, AJ, when we had him, he was not really liking the food that was, or the menus that were given to him. He was missing his mom's food. He's Nigerian, missing Nigerian food. But Nigerian food isn't, I suppose it's all right. Some of it is, you know, fufu, for example, is 100% carbohydrate, great for you. But it wasn't, and because he was away from home for 8 months, he was missing home food. And this is where food as a culture is, and food as a performance aid is huge, because the cultural significance of that. So he, basically, his mum sent all Nigerian food recipes. We analysed them. I made them into healthier versions of the same thing. While it, we were talking about this earlier, roundup and pumpkin pie we used as an example, made them into healthier versions of his mum's food, but made sure it tasted as good. Got him to taste the same recipes, the healthier version, and which he loved, and that's then what we used. So he was getting food he's familiar with, food he loves, and his train quality of his training sessions went up 25%.
Nice.
So
wow.
So that you and me may sit and think, oh, you know what, beetroot is really good, that this is good, and that is good, and we give it to an athlete, but that's not what they really want. So why not ask them what they want? And it may not be an answer you like. They might say, I love donuts. Then my job as a chef and a nutritionist is to then create a donut that is good. It might maybe bake it. But then that's giving the athlete what they want. It may not be a 10 out of 10. It may not taste a 10 out of 10 donut. Maybe an 8 out of 10. But you're still getting those flavors, you're getting those aromas, you're getting all of that. But I may use a combination of flour batter to then use, you know, I may use chickpea flour and rice flour, and so to get the softness from the rice flour for the donut, with the protein from the chickpea flour, and then I may bake it. So I don't know what, maybe I'll try doing a healthy donut, who knows, maybe mine, but not our idea.
Yeah,
but that's the whole point of culinary nutrition. So I did a culinary nutrition degree. And the whole point is to do that, is to raise quality of life for anyone with a nutritional need, while maintaining nutrition principles and specs.
That is awesome. Like you said, like for me, I would look at, you say beetroot, bringing in nitrates, bringing in, obviously bringing in your supplementation, like getting in enough certain types of proteins and sticking to the certain ratios that are going to be the optimal thing for whatever, but optimal, realistic is two different concepts, and trying to find that middle ground is where professionals like you come in and well, navigate that whole complex situation.
Yeah, and longevity. So there's that person, you might just put them off training for forever. If you start going, oh, have this and this and that, they might go, oh, you know what, I don't want to, if that's what it's going to take, I don't want to do it. I want to eat donuts, and I want to go out and have my 6 pints on the weekend. So where's the happy medium, and where do you, and it's fun. My sous chef at another football club loves brewing beer. He still does. So we actually talked quite a lot about developing a protein beer using the same beer maker. So I had to understand the beer making process first. And then we came up with, I'm giving away some secrets here. We came up with a product that I think would do really well in the market for people who like to work out but still want to go enjoy beer.
Oh, wow.
But how many people would, I mean, I haven't done the studies in terms of how many people actually train, like what, like I said, let's say there's 2 million people in the UK that train out of a population of 65 million. Of that 2 million, let's say, 10% enjoy beer. Is the market big enough to then
put in
all that work to get a protein beer into the market for a niche? Because if you like a beer, you can have a beer. But what percentage of people are going to,
protein and beer, who would have thought, hey?
Yeah.
But I love that. I love the idea. I mean, people will get like to get their protein in whatever way they can. Because the amount of females, especially, that I coach, not in general, because of course we spoil every single female out there, they tend to not even be able to hit 40, 50 grams of protein sometimes. Most days.
Yeah.
Nuts. Crazy. Yeah. So even in a sandwich, I'm getting over 40 grams. There's a lot of my female clients now hit over 120 or 200 grams, depending on what their goals are. But there is the odd one who barely hits 40 grams. There's men as well, but it's mainly females. And I think that's something that I think there needs to be a bit more education, because I think people And when I say females, I mean older population females. Because I believe it's probably because way back when, protein was associated with bodybuilding. And they didn't really see the necessity for it. Same with the older populations. I've got one who's 82. He doesn't want to eat that much protein. He always says to me, you need more of this because you go to the gym. That's the psyche that's out there.
Yeah.
And it's like, no. It's the other way around.
And there's a lot of people out there who believe protein equals steroids.
Yeah, or creatine equals steroids.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, mind-blowing. It's just wrong. Just completely wrong. But that's another reason why I'm having these kind of conversations, just to educate people around all these different topics. And hopefully people can realize that everything, there's a lot of nuance to every single topic that you can imagine. And having all these conversations, hopefully people can pick the information that I think is relevant to them and put them into the context of their specific goals and make their own informed decisions. That's basically the idea. But coming to the end of this now, because I've taken like well over an hour of time now.
It's okay.
Can you tell me a little bit about what inspired you to become a culinary chef within the performance aspect?
I've always been active. I swam the gymnastics at school, but also my father had a track in the house growing up, so when I was going to the kitchen, I've always loved food, so it brings both my passions of, gym and training and fitness and food all in one. So I went to culinary school in the States, and then every year they sent two students from the States to the oldest culinary school in Paris on an exchange program, and I was one of the two selected. So I was in Paris when the dean of the university called me and said, hey, I know you love training, etc., etc. We're thinking of starting a program in nutrition, but for chefs. Is this something you'd be interested in? And I was like, yeah, 100%, sign me up. It was an expensive program. It was over $200 for the program, so it was an expensive program, but I went back and I did it, and I was one of the first culinary nutritionists in the world. All of us who graduated were like, oh, what would we do with this degree? It's the first of its kind in the world. Some of my classmates went the obvious path into hospitals. So now you've got a chef who understands hepatic, renal, all the specific diets required in a hospital, but it's making quality food that tastes good, patients actually want to eat. Rather than some bland and boring porridge or whatever, right? Then I had some of my classmates who went the NFL route and then NBA route. We're still there. I have friends who went working as private chefs to Wayne Johnson. I have friends. I went down the wellness route, so the resort in the Caribbean. Well, actually, I started with. I just googled what's the number one wellness resort in the world, and it's a place called Chivasom in Thailand. So I went to Thailand first, and then I was in the Caribbean, and another wellness resort, and then, that's sport. So, and it's just been, because they do go on that, and I see this all the time. I've seen nutritionists who could not write a menu to save their life, because they don't understand the chef side of it, they don't understand prep and ordering and cross-utilization and recipe, that they don't understand any of that side of it. So they can create a menu, read nutrition sound, but make no practical sense. And then I've seen chefs who just like eat butter and cream and just, all that tastes amazing, who do not give monkeys about the nutrition side of it. So bringing both those two worlds together was, I think it was a genius program.
Absolutely. Yeah, like I was speaking to a few guys that are like essentially like pioneered. Like Professor Jose Antonio, essentially like pioneered sports nutrition in, I don't forget what university he's part of, Ohio, I think it is. And then there's Oscar Jurgendrup, and I really want to get him on somehow. But
so Oscar, I know we're connected on a few kind of platforms. Yeah.
Oh really?
Because through Loughborough, there's research-wise Loughborough.
For sports in context specifically, like he is the god of carbohydrates. And I always attend his webinars, and like the knowledge and all his textbooks.
Yeah.
I buy every single.
His papers are just today, he's writing them.
Yeah, he is as good as it gets. But yeah, those guys essentially pioneered sports nutrition. Like him with carbohydrates, Jose Antonio when it came to protein for endurance athletes, that's where it all kind of started. Yeah, it's crazy. And then like obviously on your side of things, like there's not many of you, and there should be way more of you, because if you look at social media nowadays, you've got loads of PTs and other influencers showing eat this, eat that, but not understanding the nuances. And like what's good for you is not good for me. And also like, and then having that deeper dive into the knowledge of what nutrients are here and how they can help with your general health or with your adaptations, with recovery or satiety, gut health, whatever it might be. So it's pretty cool. But yeah, just want to say a massive thank you. And I do appreciate you taking so much time out of this.
That's okay. International break this week, so we managed to squeeze in it.
Yeah, I appreciate it massively, because it is, you're still a busy guy, and obviously letting me sit in this beautiful area is quite special. But yeah, just want to say thank you.
No problem.
Thank you for tuning in. Cheers. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you found it useful, please share with a friend who would also benefit from these talks. If you'd like to keep up with everything else I get up to, you can check out my Instagram at @rich_performance_nutritionist, and feel free to drop me a message with your thoughts and feedback on this weekly chat so far.